The U.S. has encouraged Kenyans to bring the culprits to justice, but so far the courts here have failed to do so. The vice president is also expected to discuss regional security issues troubling East Africa, including an Islamist insurgency in Somalia and piracy. On Wednesday, he's expected to meet with Sudanese vice president Salva Kiir. Gwen Tompkins, NPR News, Nairobi.
Unions representing public sector employees in Spain say hundreds of thousands of them stayed home from work today to protest a new government austerity plan that includes pay cuts for everyone from teachers to hospital workers. Spain is under pressure from the European Union to make sharp cuts in spending to bring down the country's budget deficit. I'm Craig Windham, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Melville Charitable Trust, supporting efforts to find and fight the causes of homelessness. On the web at melvilletrust.org.
News from NPR is made possible by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, offering pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois. Today's broadcast is made possible by the Friends of WILL and by the Great Impasta, a family-owned restaurant serving foods from northern Italy for more than 25 years. The Great Impasta, located in Lincoln Square in downtown Urbana. More information is available at 359-7377.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk show. My name is David Inge. And we're glad that you're listening. We're also happy to have in the studio here once again Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County and for a long time has been stopping by here on a regular basis to answer questions about things that grow in the home landscape. Trees, shrubs, flowers, stuff you can eat, the grass, houseplants, any and all of that. If you have a problem, you can call and, you know, tell us what kind of plant it is and give us the best description of the problem. And then Sandy will see if she can maybe help you out, offer some advice. Also, from time to time, people have called in and said, I have this spot in my yard. Here's what the conditions are. I'm looking for a plant. Maybe I have some idea what it like to be like. Maybe I don't have any idea what it like to be like. What would you maybe suggest? And we've done that. So troubleshooting, plant suggestions, help with landscaping, any and all of that. Houseplants, we can do that too. Any and all of that, give us a call. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. And you may also email your questions to will-talk@illinois.edu. Hey, thank you very much for being here.
Good morning. Good.
So it's June. Coming up on this garden walk thing. When is that going to happen?
It's garden walk time for all kinds of areas, actually. The Champaign County Master Gardeners are having their garden walk June 26th. That's just around the corner. And it's on a Saturday, and it runs from 9 to 4 and 8 wonderful gardens. People can get tickets at pretty much all the garden centers here in Champaign, as well as they can always give us a call and we can work something out. It's 217-333-7672. And also a couple others coming up, if I can mention those.
Yeah.
This Sunday, June 13th, the Macon County Master Gardeners are having their garden walk. So that's Decatur. So June 13th on Sunday. And then June 19th on Saturday is the Mahomet Civic Garden Club garden walk. And then, of course, ours is June 26th. And then June 27th is a Sunday, and that's Vermilion County Master Gardeners are having their garden walk. So Sunday, you can spend just about every Saturday and Sunday going to gardens.
For the whole rest of the month.
For the whole rest of the month, pretty much. And actually, it's a great opportunity to sort of see, you know, get some ideas on. And it's always so amazing the things that people come up with. I always learn something new on maybe a plant to use or maybe even some, you know, how to use art in the garden. You know, we're never quite sure how to do that sometimes. But just some really clever ideas that just home gardeners have just come up with these things. And it's just a great opportunity. So,
yeah, and you
so
can,
definitely check it out.
It's great. You can get to see people who really are gardening under all kinds of conditions and all kinds of spaces, big spaces, little spaces, places where everything is in shade, places where people have maybe just very small places around their house, but
right.
be able to make
right.
have made the maximum use of the space and conditions that they have. And it's really great just to be able to see some living examples of and you see plants that maybe you are new to you, haven't seen before. So, yeah, it's a great thing.
Absolutely. And so it is one of those things where you learn, you know, even what we try to do in Champaign, of course, I think all the Garden Walk folks try to do is give people ideas on existing landscapes, or maybe you just moved out into the suburbs and it's, you know, used to be a cornfield and you have nothing mm-hmm. at this point, and get some ideas on what you can do from, you know, from a blank slate. So.
Okay.
So check those out and check with your local master gardeners and see if they're having a garden walk.
We have some callers here. We are ready to go. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455, and email will-talk@illinois.edu. And we'll start in with someone in Urbana. Line number one right here. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Ants. I have ants in many places in my various garden beds. Are they damaging? Should I just, I mean, they bite me, which I just hate. But aside from that, are they a problem? Should I be looking to rehouse them?
So maybe this is a question. Isn't your second hour on the gentleman that
well, yeah,
entomology? He's probably
yeah,
not going to how to get rid of them.
Yeah, I don't
or
know if
to,
he can tell you what to do about ants in your garden.
He probably tell you a lot more about ants. Ants in the garden, probably the big thing. They're not really damaging the plants or anything along those lines. You know, and we actually, they're healthy in a soil situation because
okay.
they'll actually even eat some certain pest eggs. And, you know, sometimes they actually can do some help as well. But and traditionally what happens is if you get rid of one colony, another one's going to move in. So it's,
oh.
you know, it's
I mean,
one
they
of those
seem,
things.
They seem to be everywhere, but I was just curious if they were, you know, more beneficial to the soil than they, if, or if they were really going to be damaging plants, if they would eat roots, if there were problems like that.
No. They're not okay. doing any of that kind of stuff. So it is one of those things that typically we try to live with them as much as we can. You may find that, you know, there may be certain areas in your yard. I've noticed that areas like around brick patios and stuff, sometimes where the soil is very sandy, sometimes you'll tend to get more of them. So sometimes just sort of changing the habitat a little bit can change where they are. So sometimes
yeah,
that helps
well,
a little bit.
I have one little fenced-in, theoretically rabbit-proof garden, and they tend to be in there for reasons they don't quite understand. But
very nice
if they're not
loose.
Hurting the plants, then I'll just dig around them. And
Yeah, okay. Good luck.
All right, thank you.
Sure. Uh-huh.
Very good. Next, we'll talk with someone in Downs, I believe, line number four. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Sandy, I have I don't have it, but it doesn't matter. I need to take care of it. A Japanese tree lilac that is lovely, except that it has leaves that are dying mm-hmm. on one side, and it's creating what look to me like water shoots in some places.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I can't figure out what it is. I have cut a branch. I've stripped it. Don't see any sign of verticillium. And I look at the tree and I don't see anything that has damaged it.
Mm-hmm. So this has been going on for a couple of years. It seems to be this year.
Yeah, it seems to be this year.
Okay. And when you check the limbs, do the branches, the ones that don't seem to, where the leaves are not doing well, does it seem like the branches are actually dying, or is it just seem like it's just the leaves?
It's just the leaves.
Yeah. You know, we've certainly seen a number of different disease issues going on this year, because it was, you know, we did have a time period there where it was fairly moist for long periods of time, and so we do end up with a few disease issues. Why it would be just on one side of the tree makes me wonder a little bit on a disease issue, but I guess my thought is at this point you might do a couple things. You could certainly bring a sample into our office and we could see what we could do. You could also
I'm near Bloomington.
Well, take it to your local master gardener office.
I am one.
you are? I is one, yeah. So it is one. Okay. So, well, there you go. You can certainly send a sample to the plant clinic.
Sure.
Would be the other thing. But I would really keep a close eye on it. And if it appears that the branches are still alive, you know, and the buds are still alive, it has every indication that it could leaf out again.
Okay.
So I don't know exactly when this showed up. Now, we had a lot of wind damage on certain sides of the tree. Now, most of them have grown out of it now. But earlier in the year when the leaves were first coming out, we had a lot of wind damage, and it appeared, and it was just on the windward side, you know, where they were getting hit with the wind.
But it's on the south side. And I really, I don't think that's what it is. What bothers me more than anything is seeing these shoots.
Right. You know. Right, which certainly could indicate that there's some stress issues. And then how old is this tree?
Oh, it's probably, it's fairly young, maybe 4 years.
Okay. I think the other thing it might do, and I don't know if you planted it or somebody else planted it, but it might be one of those things where you just want to do a little investigation, just take a trowel and just sort of gently.
I was there when it was planted. It was planted pretty carefully.
But my comment was is that maybe just to go ahead and dig down a little bit. Sometimes you can do a little investigation and see if there isn't a girdling root. The 4 years would be pretty young to be starting to see that. But, you know, to make sure there isn't something going on that side of the tree. I assume there hadn't been any construction or anything that would have killed roots on that side. But, yeah, you're right. Often when there's stress like this, they will send up these suckers in a tree that I wouldn't typically think of having suckers.
That's
kind of an issue, yeah.
And I see them around town, and they're so beautiful.
Yeah.
None of them have this.
I would do a little bit more investigation to see if there might have been some damage on the trunk or something that isn't obvious at this point.
So look pretty carefully at the trunk.
Yeah.
It is in a place where it gets mowed by the town, the village, and we scream at the mowers, and we have some stakes around them, so we try to keep
them. Is it mulched around it? Okay, so if it's mulched and try to keep, string trimmers and all that stuff really wreak havoc on trees.
Yeah, so. we've tried to do that pretty well. So, okay.
Yeah, well, good luck. It might be one of those things where you just want to maybe send in a sample at plant clinic along with some pictures.
And
see if they have some ideas that way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, thank you very
good
much.
Luck.
All right, thanks for the call. We have, as our guest this morning in this hour, Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's on the program once a month. It's always on Tuesday. We talk about lawn and garden care, things that grow in the home landscape. And she'll do her best to help you out if you've got a problem or, as I said at the beginning, maybe you're interested in a suggestion about a particular plant for a particular place. You can call us 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. And we'll talk next with someone in Champaign, line number 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
As you were going through your litany of topics, I was wondering if sometime you might talk about yard art and where you might get it, what it might be, whether it's plastic bottles or concrete. There's a lot of interesting things that go in yards from time to time.
In a good way or in a bad way? I don't know.
It's amazing what can
And sometimes it may just be in the eye of the beholder.
Eye of the beholder,
I guess,
which is just fine, too, I think.
Anyway, topic suggestion.
Yeah. Mm. Well, actually, that's a good idea. Because, you know, some of the most interesting things I've ever seen have been, either architectural pieces, you know, something that they've gotten from, you know, we're lucky here that we have PACA, the Preservation and Conservation Association. Pardon?
They're called a folly sometimes.
A folly?
Big ones used to be called a folly.
Oh, okay.
You put up something that looked like a broken down antique piece.
Sure. But some of the most interesting things I've seen have been really what probably most people consider discarded things, but people have used them in very creative ways. Yeah. So I think you're absolutely right. I think that's the fun thing about things like Garden Walk and stuff. You can see how people have used different things out in the garden.
You could have a large ant.
A large ant?
Going back to the last call, or the bee people have a large steel bee, which is kind of nice, and birds nest inside it.
Oh, yeah, that's at the Pollinatarium. Yeah. They do have a giant bee there on the U of I campus.
Okay, well, thank you.
Okay, right, thanks.
Thanks for the call. I have an email here I want to get in, and it concerns a houseplant, and I'm not sure how to pronounce the name of this plant, so I'll have to spell it for you. The simple question about this houseplant, K-A-L-A-N-C-H-O-E.
Yeah, Kalanchoe or Kalancho.
Kalancho, all right.
Kalanchoe.
They bought it last fall from a roadside stand. I read somewhere, says the listener, that you should throw away any that is at least 2 years old. He says, I don't know how old this is, but it seems to be healthy. It never flowered over the winter. I want it transplanted into a bigger pot. So my question is, should I bother? Will it flower? Should I transplant it into a sandy-like soil?
Yeah, this is actually probably a plant that people see quite a bit. It has very succulent leaves, and they'll see it, and it has very bright colored flowers, really very pretty. But the one thing about calancoe or calancho, it's actually a short day plant, short day, long night. So it needs the same thing as poinsettias in order to flower. So if it's getting too much, if it's getting actually too much light, it won't flower. So typically that's why you'd see it, you know, and typically that's when you see them available is around, you know, Christmas time and kind of through that season. So you just kind of have to think through that. And I'm sure if you go on the website, I don't know exactly how many hours, but it's probably along the same lines as poinsettias in that they need that short day, long night in order to bloom, which it typically would be our later season. So I would say absolutely, you can I would go ahead and repot it. More than likely, it's obviously not going to flower this summer. But as the days get shorter in the fall, and if you can put it somewhere where it's not going to get a lot of light, It is a tropical plant, so you can't leave it out. But I would leave it out probably certainly through the month of September. And then if you can put it somewhere in a bedroom or someplace where it's not going to get any light at night, you'll find that it'll go ahead and flower for you. It's usually not that florific flower that we see the greenhouses produce, but they still go ahead and flower again. So.
Okay, very good. Hope that helps. Let's go to Piatt County next. Line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I'd like to ask, just for some really brief clarification of all the massive amounts of information on roses, not, you know, I understand tea rose, but the difference between polyanthas and floribundas and shrub roses, I'm not quite clear, and I have read things on this, so I'm expecting you to clarify this. But but then I want to know, are all knockout roses shrub roses? And everybody seems to be racing to knockout roses, but there are more shrub-type roses, correct?
Yeah, I think the confusing thing about roses these days, and I don't claim to be an absolute rose expert, but I've certainly grown them and been around them enough. But I think the one thing with roses is what you'll find is there's lots of hybridization, and those true clear designations I'm not sure exist as easily as they used to, because there's been so much. They're trying to get more flowers, but they're trying to get the, you know, disease resistant. So it's been a lot of cross hybridization between all these different ones. So I think it's hard to sort of pigeonhole some of these roses. So I don't think I've probably helped you too much, but maybe I've helped you in your sense of confusion, because I think the rest of us are confused too.
Okay, and my second really fast question is that I would like to landscape in front with a spring flowering something that also has some autumn, like maybe the crabs, apples that stay. And I would like something that can take it. I'm out here in the country with wind and north winds and everything. So is there a I mean, I have a lot of room to plant a tree, but what would be an ornamental something with flowers in the spring and then perhaps some color in the fall?
And you're looking for a tree?
Yes.
I understand that. So like a small tree is what you're looking
for?
Yeah,
I can even do a large tree. I just was ornamental. I thought crab and then maybe a sergeant crab or something. I just was asking your advice. I don't really know.
Right. And there's lots of great crab apples out there. You just have to make sure that they're resistant to apple scab. That's probably one of the biggest diseases that we have problems with. But make sure it has some disease resistance in there. So do a little homework on that first. There's lots of them, and there's all kinds of sizes and all that kind of good stuff. The other thing that you might think about, too, is even things like I particularly like service berries, amelanchiers. They actually have a very nice white flower in the springtime. They have a berry that's producing right now, and it tastes just like blueberries. I just picked a bunch of them the other day, so they're really quite tasty. And then in the fall, they actually have a very nice fall color, kind of a mix of, you know, kind of maroon and red and yellow, you know, kind of that mixture of fall colors. So it's they're very pretty small trees.
Okay.
And so I really like the service berries.
Okay.
So that would be, and it's also native, which is the other. So there's lots of pluses with that particular tree. And even things like red buds, I think, are particularly nice. They have a nice, usually very nice yellow fall color. It's not those reds that you might typically think of. But those would be just a couple of them that I could think of. And the whole thing with the knockout roses, I think they're kind of a mix. They're kind of a shrub rose, but you can really do a heavy prune on those, I've noticed, almost like a tea rose, where you can really cut them down. You don't have to let them get real big. So kind of back to your original, your first question.
Okay. Thanks so much for your help.
Uh-huh, sure.
Very good. Thank you. On to line three. This is someone in Champaign. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
I've been having trouble with my. Are you still there?
Yeah.
Okay.
We just lost you for a second, but yeah, we got you. Go ahead.
Beeped again. I bought some three different varieties of blueberry at Aldi and six raspberry plants.
Mm-hmm.
And only one of the, well, it was two, but now only one has any green on it, and none of the blueberries do. And I did treat the soil. I mixed ammonium sulfate, which is what one of the gardening stores recommended to me last year. I bought it last year, but I didn't get the blueberries till this year.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still firmly rooted, but they're not showing any signs of any green. And I've done the application when we planted them, and then I did an application about a month later.
Yeah. So what you might do is just take your thumbnail and sort of scratch the stem a little bit and see if there's any green underneath there. If there isn't, then they've died for one reason or another. And I think the one thing about blueberries is they're one of those that's really kind of tough to get established. But once you find that happy place for them and you get them established, then they really can be pretty long-lived plants. It's sort of getting them through those first couple of years. And you did the right thing. You know, they need in a more acidic soil than what we have here. So typically we would use things like the ammonium sulfate for fertilization. Usually sulfur might be something that for sort of a long-term change in the soil pH is typically what we'd also add to the soil. So I have a feeling maybe that for one reason or another, they just didn't get well established. And they hate to dry out and they hate to get too wet. So they're one of those plants. Blueberries are just one of those plants that really needs kind of that happy soil, that kind of evenly moist, mulching them helps, those kind of things. But I have a feeling that maybe, you know, if you're pretty comfortable with the health of the plant when you bought them, then I have a feeling that for one reason or other, they just didn't quite do well to get established. So I wouldn't give up. You certainly have the area then, evidently, you know, where you've changed the soil pH and all that, that maybe you could go ahead and try again.
Each plant. I didn't do like a whole trough or something. I just did it right around each plant.
Yeah. What you want to do is that before you plant would be the thing to do, is to actually add the sulfur. You know, it'll say on the label how much you need to add per square foot, those kind of things. And really, you know, try and change the soil pH in that area. And actually, it's better if you do it the year before, and because soil pH is a very slow process to change it. So trying to do it a little bit, you know, even preparing it now, you know, I certainly wouldn't give up on it. You certainly can grow blueberries around here. It's just really hard sometimes. And then just, you know, obviously, just the quality of the plants, those kind of things I'd watch for.
And what about the raspberries? What's up with them? I've watered these things religiously.
Yeah.
But I don't think I've overwatered them, but, you know.
But they don't seem like they have any green or anything to them.
Well, two did. One's getting shaded out by peppermint.
Yeah. The nice thing about raspberries is sometimes even over the top, our blueberries don't really do it quite so much, but sometimes with raspberries, they'll actually go ahead and send up some shoots from the base. So I wouldn't give up on those completely yet. I'm one to sort of hang out for a while, and I sort of tolerate maybe not looking so good just to see if it's going to come out of it or not. And raspberries certainly have that ability to do that, but so you might give them a little bit of time. I'd probably give them a few more weeks, and then if nothing's happening, then it's... But I'd say the blueberries at this point, if you're not seeing anything and there's nothing green underneath the stem, they're probably goners.
And is it too late to plant sugarsnap peas? I planted them at the appropriate time, and the rabbits got most of them.
Yeah, pretty hot. They're really not. They really don't particularly like hot weather. But you could certainly do a fall crop if you get it. You know, if you actually plant them around August, that way they're actually starting to produce when it's starting to hopefully get a little cooler in September.
Yeah, but August what? Beginning, middle, or end?
I would probably try the end of August. I'm trying to think September. Might be a little hard. I'd say probably mid-August.
Okay.
And get them up and going, and then hopefully it's a little cooler by the time they start to produce, which usually ends up being a little bit better than trying to do it now.
All right. What's the technical name for butterfly bush, not butterfly weed?
Buddleia.
Buddleia?
Uh-huh.
Okay. All right, thanks very much.
Sure. Very good. On to, let's see, Oakwood, line two. Hello.
Yes, I have a couple of questions, if I may. I'm a novice at this, so I need some advice. I received a lilac bush from my mother several years back, and she's since passed. It took a couple years for it to bloom. And then each year after that, I'd have fewer and fewer blooms, and now it's only blooming on the top. What can I do to get the bush to fill out and bloom?
Mm-hmm. So it's getting plenty of sun, so sun's not an issue?
yeah, it gets pretty good sun where it's at.
Yeah, because they really will flower much better if they're at least getting 8 hours of sun. So sometimes sun's an issue for them. The other thing you can do, especially those older lilacs, they tend to bloom better on the younger wood. And so actually, if you, at this point, it's been there long enough that I would just go ahead and you can do that now. You usually want to do it right after they flower. And actually remove to the ground some of the older stems.
Okay.
And that will encourage the new stuff to come up, and then they'll flower better on that newer stuff.
Okay, appreciate that.
Sure.
Okay, and then the other question I have is, I have very few sunny spots in my yard. I've got a lot of a wooded area, and there's a lot of shade. And I'd like to plant some apple trees. And do they actually need to have sunshine for apple trees?
Yeah, they're just going to flower better. And, you know, flowering is what you want, obviously, to get the apples. I mean, you can certainly, you know, try it. And if you're okay with maybe just having a few, it's just they're going to do much better. And actually, they'll usually have less disease issues if they're in full sun, because you want those leaves to dry off on a fairly regular basis, those kind of things. So, you know, it's one of those things you may want to try one of the, you know, dwarfs and kind of see how it works for you. But I wouldn't have grand expectations of bushel baskets full of apples.
Okay, and this is kind of a two-part on this one, is I've actually collected the seeds out of apples that I've eaten, a red and yellow delicious, and I've got little plants that are about 8 inches tall now that I've raised indoors, and I don't expect them to be good like they came out of the store, because I know all of that's done in nurseries, et cetera, but I want to feed the deer, the wild deer that pass through. Can I put a red and yellow delicious together, and then they would pollinate each other, or put them together for stability, or how does that work?
I don't know if red and yellow will pollinate each other, to be honest with you.
So I should put red to red and yellow to yellow?
No, I mean, you need different ones, but they need to flower at the same time, and I'm just not sure about reds and yellows that they flower at the same time in order to... Now, yeah, do you have any other, like, crab apples or anything else like that around, or...
I don't, but I could probably get some.
No, I mean, that's fine, because sometimes if you have crab apples around, they flower at the same time, they'll actually go ahead and pollinate some of the apples as well. So I was trying to get – so you need different ones. You can't have two yellows and expect to get – you know, you need two different kinds. So you're on you're on the right track. I'm just not sure right this moment that I could tell you that reds and yellows will cross.
So you need two different varieties of apples. You can't have red delicious, pollinate red delicious. I got you.
Correct. Okay. So that – right. So that would be one thing. And also, I will tell you that the ones, obviously, and maybe you don't really care if you're just going to let the apples drop anyway, but the apples that you're eating, what you'll end up with is really tall. I mean, apple trees want to be tall. They'll want to be 45, 50 feet tall, which we don't think about apple trees that big, because they're put on dwarfing rootstocks. They're actually grafted onto dwarfing rootstocks to keep them short. So
sure,
it makes it.
The raccoons can have them.
So. Yeah. So if you don't care about picking them, it's just tough to pick apples on a 40-foot tree. So that's why they put them on dwarfing rootstocks. So.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your help, Mayor.
Sure. Thank you. And again, I should introduce our guest, Sandy Mason. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month, always on a Tuesday, she's here and we talk about lawn and garden care. And 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. And let's see, Dwight, I think, is our next caller on our line 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I saw an ad for a gardening book that said that apple cider vinegar will make dandelions disappear. Is that true? And if so, how do you use it?
Yeah. You know, we certainly have seen a lot of things about vinegar being an herbicide. So I certainly have seen that. The problem is the vinegar that's used as an herbicide, and it's effective as an herbicide, is a much higher strength than what you're going to get through apple cider vinegar or anything off the shelf. It's much higher, and that's what has the killing power. So you actually can buy vinegar herbicide, but just to realize the ones like apple cider and stuff, they're going to get off the shelf. They're just too dilute to do much. What you'll probably find with stuff like dandelions, that if you did do something like that, it'll probably brown up the leaves, but then it'll just send up new leaves. So you're not going to kill the plant. You probably damage the leaves, but you won't kill the plant. So that's kind of the hard part with those.
But where would you get that super strength vinegar?
You have to purchase it as vinegar for the herbicide, or it would be something that is available to laboratories and things like that. So it's not available kind of off the shelf unless you buy it as vinegar as an herbicide. And it is out there. I can't think of any brand names right offhand, but they're certainly out there.
All right. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Thanks. Let me get in another email question here from someone who has a hydrangea and wants to know, after the hydrangeas bloom, what do you do with them? How do you care for them?
You can, it kind of depends on which hydrangea is, whether it's going to rebloom or not. But typically, I just like to see the old flower heads, and that's fine. I just sort of let them go. And then when I don't like looking at them anymore, I just trim off the old flower heads. But, they look kind of nice. They kind of go through different changes, but then they get kind of brown and not so pretty. So then I go ahead and trim them off. Now, some of them will go ahead, like if it's in the summer, and some of those will go ahead and continue to flower. But a lot of them kind of, once they're done, they're done kind of thing. So you just enjoy them and then trim them off as you need to.
Okay. I have a hydrangea in my front yard that's been in the ground now for, I'm not, maybe 6-7 years more. And it's one that's a relatively small variety. Mm-hmm. It gets to be about 3 feet tall. And this year had the most spectacular flowering ever.
Oh, that's great.
I just can't believe it. And I've never had more than, I think, maybe about 2 flowers on it. And now this year, I think at the end of every stem, there's a flower and one of these great big white snowball.
Yeah, that's great.
I'm just amazed. I don't know what, after all these years, got it so jazzed.
I know. No kidding. You really do wonder sometimes about these because, it depends on the hydrangea, which we've talked about before. Some of them bloom on old wood and some of them bloom on old and new wood, like in the summer, it's supposed to bloom on both. But sometimes that old wood gets killed off or something. But even with that, I've noticed with, like, my endless summer, it looks great this year. And then 2 years ago, it looked horrible. I was ready to pull it out. So, I don't know that I know exactly what the answer is there, because as far as I know, I can't necessarily pinpoint one thing that makes them happy. So I don't know. Maybe the warmer temperatures in April and then plenty of moisture. Maybe really got them going. And, I can't say that the winter was all that terribly mild. So I don't know that we can pinpoint that. I don't know. It's a mystery.
Well,
that's the beauty of gardening.
There's
always mystery.
Yes. Well, yes. That's true.
It keeps us going.
And I think what you said before to earlier callers too is you've got to be patient. And if some things, give them a chance to do what they're going to do.
So. And I have noticed that with hydrangeas. It does seem like it takes them a couple years to really get going. And so it is one of those that sometimes you do have to be patient for that third or fourth year.
Okay. On to another caller, Charleston. Is the caller, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Enjoy the program. I've got a white clover coming up in the lawn, and what's the best way to treat that?
So you want to get rid of it?
Mm-hmm.
The reason I say that is that, the old mixes used to include white clover because it actually is nitrogen fixing and actually helps but that's not really what you want me to say, is it? and so you certainly can use, herbicides would be typically what you would use. And there actually is one, I think it's triclopyr that's used specifically for white clover. So if you go into a store and look for white clover control, and it is one of those that's fairly effective on white clover.
Somebody said that you could, that the white clover signals that you have a deficiency in your lawn and that if you use fertilizer, and I'm not sure what kind.
No, that's not necessarily true. Well, yes and no. They have found that white clover tends to grow better in low fertility lawns. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably because it's growing better than the lawn's growing is typically. I think that's what's happening probably there. So sometimes actually, if you're still within a good range, maybe sometimes adding fertility to the soil sometimes will help the grass to grow better and the clover to not grow as well. So sometimes that helps. Also mowing height. I don't know how high you're mowing it at this point, but sometimes actually mowing a little higher sometimes helps, those kind of things.
Thank you. Could I ask another one?
Uh-huh. Yeah, sure.
I have a cherry tree that's supposed to be a smaller tree, and now it's about 12, 15 feet high. I'd like to cut it back. When could I do that?
Well, typically we do that during the dormant season, so usually like in February and March would be a time we'd go ahead and prune those back. So are you getting cherries right now?
No, the birds got more than I did, considerably more.
My Sarah cherry.
I want to put a net on it, but yeah. Why?
Yeah, my cherry tree is just growing great guns right now. I just had a great cherry year. So.
That's nasty.
Now, if I'd share, you wouldn't say that.
Okay.
Good
well,
luck.
Thanks
yeah.
very much.
Thanks very much.
Let's go on to Indiana, line two. Hello.
Oh, guys. Next door to me's cherry tree is just incredible.
It's a good year.
Going crazy. People are walking down through the alley I've never seen before.
Helping themselves.
You know, now you've got to be pretty tall to find a cherry from that tree. What I'm calling about, I was told, was called false bamboo. Or as some person said, faux bamboo. Anyway, I've also found out on the web it's called Japanese knotwood at times. They cut it back. The lady, landlady cut it back because it was getting immense. And they took it away. And I swear to God, within 3 or 4 weeks, it was back to almost the same height as it is. After some investigation, I discovered that the runners probably pushed up a garage floor. And the garage is a long time gone. And that the false bamboo is growing between the cracks and developing regular-sized stalks. And of course, the very thin stalks, and we had this good wind the last couple of days and heavy rain, and it was almost like a downdraft came down in the center. They've all sort of folded over when they broke. And I found out that in some states you're only allowed to grow this stuff, and that it's very invasive.
Yeah.
And I also found out, unfortunately, there's a lady in the community that's allergic to whatever it has. I don't know whether it's something on the leaves or something. No flowers have appeared yet, though I understand there's flowers also. And but everybody got real squeamish about how to get rid of it. One fellow said he used a syringe and it individually did the runners with some kind of chemical to kill it. And what I get out of it is that it is hard as H to get rid of.
Yeah.
And I just wonder if you have some secret sleeve, you know, something secret up your sleeve that would take care of it. Because eventually the guy next door is going to get upset because it's already close to his, you know, since his property line going up to the sky.
Yeah.
And it's growing very, very fast.
Yeah.
You can't hear it grow like corn at night, but it's close to it.
Yeah, right.
And I have a feeling that if back again would just have more immense growth again. And some said they were actually using it for recycling purposes because it grew so fast that they could make things out of it that were cheap and did, you know, when they were, you know, biodegradable, so they weren't concerned about it. I just want to know if you have any ideas or, you know, complain about the production.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I assume it must be polygonum, and I'm trying to think there's another name for it. Japanese knotweed, I think, is also what it's called.
Yeah,
I saw Japanese
that
knotweed,
well,
does that sound right? Okay.
Knotwood, I think that's what they call it.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know what the older cultures call them, but about ever so many, there's this, it almost looks like an O-ring around it.
Yeah, right. So, right. I think it's a polygonum is the which is in the smart weeds and stuff, which we have a bunch of other plants that are in that same category. And you're absolutely right. And I've seen it on the list of watch plants, as in this stuff is, you know, doesn't know it's bound. So you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
I don't have any, you know, I wish I had some absolute thing that could tell you, but I have a feeling what it's going to take is just a lot of persistence and then sort of hitting it on different fronts. I don't quite get the syringe thing. That sounds like a lot of time-consuming stuff to me.
Yeah, very serious.
Right, but I think certainly, you know, herbicides are one of those cases where people could certainly make a case for using an herbicide to try to kill off the roots. So it needs to be something systemic, and then just to continually, you know, try to, you know, make sure it doesn't flower. They actually do have flowers, but they're know-nothing little flowers at the very end. So typically it's, you know, making sure that it's mowed down or whatever, so at least it's not flowering, those kind of things. But it's going to have to be more than one thing on any of these that we're trying to kill off. So, yeah, I wish I had a good clue for you. It might be one of those things where you want to look at. There's actually, if you have web access, you can go to the invasive plant website.
Okay.
And actually look, and they'll give you management types of techniques. I think Nature Conservancy is one of those. That,
that'd be good.
Yeah, so you might see, they might have some other discussions on which herbicides work better.
Yeah, so that probably present this to the landlady. I'm going to have all my
absolutely
together.
Yeah,
so she'll ask questions undoubtedly. Okay, well, thanks a lot.
Yes. Well, good luck.
We have about 10 minutes left here with Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension, Champaign County. On every month on Tuesday, she's here. We talk about lawn and garden care, and we'll take as many questions as we can. I have a couple of emails here I wanted to get in. First of all, we have someone who says that he'd like to plant a garden. This would be in full sun, and he has in mind a pattern that he wants to do. He says, now, it's not the flag. He says the colors that he wants to work with are, in fact, red, white, and blue. So he wants to put a specific pattern, red, white, and blue. And he's wanting to know, what plants or flowers could you recommend that would be small enough to capture some detail and yet hardy enough to last through the whole summer?
I think I would probably look at the annual vinca, and this is not the vinca vine. This is actually vinca. Sometimes people call it Madagascar periwinkle or whatever, but they're short plants, and they're really pretty tough, and they don't get much taller than maybe 8 inches, might be tops, probably 6 to 8 inches, and they stay fairly compact, and you certainly can get them. You can't get them in blue, so you certainly can get them in red and white. Blue is going to be a little bit tougher. I think the only blue that I could think of right offhand that where you would stay compact like that would be azuratum. Or floss flower, sometimes it's called. You can get that in blue. It's kind of a light blue. The other one would be pretty good if you don't mind having a little bit more height to it, would be the annual blue salvia. It's a nice deep blue. We just don't have a whole lot of blues, you know, true blues. If you have, again, a little bit more space and you don't mind doing maybe a little bit of pruning here and there, would be blue petunias.
Yeah.
And you certainly can do red, white, and blue petunias because they come in all those colors. So that would be another one, and those would typically be ones that could be used. But this almost harkens back to the whole idea of bedding plants, which during the Victorian era, that's really what they had, and they'd make like clocks and all kinds of things out of flowers, you know, all these designs and stuff like that. So you might actually even go back and look at some of that information on some of the things they use for bedding plants. So you're probably going to look at annuals, and certainly going to be looking at those plants that are like petunias and vinca and azuratum.
Okay, hope that helps. Also, we have someone who says that they'd like any suggestions on how to get rid of an old poison ivy vine that is taking over hostas, mayapples, bluebells, bleeding hearts, etc. in their woodland garden. I've tried pulling it out by hand for the past 3 years, and it's just getting bigger.
Yeah, that's another one that's tough. There are some brush controls, herbicide brush controls, that you can use. Obviously, you have to be very careful around things like hosta, you know, because this would be something that it wouldn't know the difference between hosta and some of those. So I would just go in the store, look for some brush control. A lot of those can be applied as a cut surface treatment. So you actually cut it off or get somebody who's not allergic to cut it off, and then you actually put the herbicide right on the cut surface. So you're not having to spray it all over the place. So it's a pretty effective way. And then just read the label. It'll talk about cut surface treatments on brush. And then that's probably going to be the only way that I can think of the really, other than, you know, as she said, she tried to pull it out, but digging it out, those kind of things, it was kind of what you're left at. But then you worry about, obviously, people getting, you know, the poison ivy on them or the clothes or whatever that can certainly be transferred. So I would really be looking at brush control.
Okay. Hope that helps. Back to the phones here. And next we'll talk with someone in Savoy. Line one. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. I have a question. Now, your guests probably learned this in school, and maybe even I did too, but I forgot. What is the definition of a herbaceous plant?
I know we're not supposed to use what something isn't to actually define it, but usually it's considered something that doesn't form a woody stem.
It doesn't what?
Form a woody stem.
So a herbaceous plant is something that does not form a woody stem.
Right, which could be, you know, anything that we could think of, from peonies to, I guess you could even make the case that vegetables, and some of those are actually herbaceous plants.
By the way, David, nobody on the Farm Report show ever talks about anything other than herbicides.
Okay, bye now.
Well, all right. I guess you can pronounce it any way you like. It's okay with
me. And actually,
me.
It is pronounced either way.
Okay. Well,
we've had this discussion before. So I looked it up, and it is absolutely pronounced either way. Is it either way?
You say either, I say either.
Tomato, tomato.
Okay, Bloomington, Illinois, line number 4. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
Ants seem to be a big topic today. And I have a strawberry bed with about 25 plants. It's in a raised bed, has straw underneath. And every plant has an anthill coming up the stalks of the strawberries. And I'm just beside myself when I go to pick the berries. But I don't understand why they would. It's a cone-shaped all the way up of every one of those bundles.
Well,
what can I do?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, that's a good question. Usually, I notice they do like raised beds, and I think it's because they drain, you know, the beds drain well and stuff. And since these guys have their colonies in the soil, they don't want anything that stays wet for long periods of time. So I've noticed that even around some of my raised beds, they kind of like some of those areas. Now, why it's around each individual plant, again, it may be just, I wonder, so is this a fairly new planting? Has it been there?
3 years old.
3 years old. So it might be, I have a feeling it's just a great spot that somehow it must be a little bit more open, like right around the plants, which would make sense the way strawberries grow, that you're going to get these kind of open areas around it. So I don't know, unless the next guest that you have on can talk about habitat again with ants. I think what I might think about, and maybe right now is not a particularly good time, but you might think about actually, you know, you don't want to smother strawberries, but I might really think about, you know, making sure there isn't any open areas under there to try to discourage them by, you know, adding a little compost or adding a little soil or just do a little investigation along those lines. Now, obviously, it's a little bit open because they've created that. But typically, we don't like to use insecticides on ants simply because they are fairly, you know, they're good, just part of the ecosystem and stuff. But you may find in certain areas that you want to go that route.
Well, and there certainly are. Oh, I put straw underneath all of the berries, so the berries would come out on top of the straw, and they're still there. I mean, and it isn't like it's just soil. There's straw, and then they go past the straw and on up the trunk of the plant.
Usually, you know, with ant, what I've at least seen is that with ants, it's there's something about that area that makes it desirable. They've just found a nice, you know, the same place that we would go and find a nice house location. They find a nice house location. It sort of fits their needs. And so what we have to sort of figure out is why that is, and then how can we change it? Mm-hmm. And so I think that's why I'd really watch and look underneath. It's real easy for strawberry plants to get a little bit too high, even where you actually are even seeing the roots, and that would be a great spot for them to hang out. So I would really make sure that the plant, you're not seeing any roots off the strawberries, to the point where you may want to go ahead and add soil or mulch, you know, something, compost or something, to sort of make sure there's no issue with that. And certainly if it's a new planting, that can happen.
Okay, well, I'll give that a try.
Yeah, good luck.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. And let's see, the next caller is in Champaign. This is line number 2. Hello.
Hi, I'm wondering if you have any cure for an infestation of Tree of Heaven. It's an in-town. We bought our place in town about 45 years ago, and our neighbors had Tree of Heaven. Well, I have them now all the time.
Yeah, yeah. Where they're just the little trees are coming up all over the place.
Everywhere. Yeah. I cut and cut and cut and cut.
Yeah. Well, pretty much we find they reseed like crazy. If people aren't familiar with Trees of Heaven, they have lots and lots and lots of seeds. And unfortunately, it seems like every single one of them germinate. So as long as there's a mature tree there that's sending out these seeds, you're going to have issues, unfortunately. Oh. Typically, you know, you're not going to be able to typically just cutting them off isn't going to do it, as you've probably found.
No, and I pull up them, you know, when they're very young, I can pull them up, but.
Right. Right. So it may be one of those things where we go back to the whole herbicide issue where you may decide you want to do, again, sort of cut surface treatment where you actually sort of paint something on, again, sort of read the label, and then you just paint on an herbicide, and that'll kill off the roots if you can't dig them up. So first thing would be, obviously, if you can get to the point where you can recognize them when they're really young and dig them up. And I'm, you know, it's one of those things, as long as there's a source of seeds, this is going to be a regular issue for you, unfortunately.
Well, when you say paint with an herbicide for the for about 3 years now. Every time we've cut down one of any size, like an inch in diameter, we have put Roundup, painted the cut with Roundup, and it doesn't seem to make any difference. Do we have the wrong herbicide?
Yeah, that could very well be, because I don't know. It'd be one of those things we have to look at to see if that, and evidently that's not evidently it's not a good herbicide for that particular problem. So you may find you want to go to one of the brush killers.
Okay, fine.
Brush controls, things like for poison ivy and stuff like that.
Okay.
And you may find it's much more effective for you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
good luck.
I'm not even sure that Tree of Heaven is deserving of being called a tree. It's just a really tall weed as far as I'm concerned.
It really is, although they get to be very large trees.
But it's one of those things.
You know, they're tough old birds. I mean, you really got to give them credit. I mean, they really do hang in there. But unfortunately, yeah, and it's such a misnomer having a Tree of Heaven. You think it sounds like this wonderful thing on paradise.
Okay, now I got a question for you. Now, in my yard, in my front yard, I have a number of places there are daffodils. And in the past, I've tried to be really patient with the foliage because, you know, you want to let the foliage die back naturally, because what that's doing is it's storing up the energy that it's going to use to flower the next time around.
Right.
For some reason this year, I'm getting very impatient. They look terrible.
And I
go out there and I try to do the thing where you tie them up, and at least tie them up in a little bundle so they're not all sprawled out over the place. Look terrible.
Right.
But they look terrible, and I'd like to, in between them, when there are open spaces, I like to then, once they're gone, go in there and plug in some annuals and, you know, do some stuff.
Right.
And I'm thinking, okay, now how long do I have to wait? Do they really have to completely brown up and die back before I can cut them back?
You know, that's the ideal situation, is to let them die down naturally.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as long as they're green, they can photosynthesize and, you know, obviously food reserves in the bulb and, you know, which is all the things that we want. Now, okay, that's the ideal situation. You and me, I just the other day cut some of mine back because I was the same way. I was just really tired of looking at them.
Yeah.
So I think if you at least can wait until like 1st of June or so, where you've really given them, you know, a good solid month after they've bloomed and, you know, really have done well, then I would say most of them, they're pretty tough bulbs. I don't think you're going to do any really long-lasting damage by going ahead and getting rid of them at this point, because we're here and we're looking at June.
Yeah.
So it's not an issue. But the textbook answer is
wait until they really completely
die back. You don't braid them or do anything like – no? Okay.
Braid them. And I put some little beads in there, too.
Little hats on them.
The little hat. Yeah.
See, you just got to work with them. Work with them.
Okay. Real quick, Belgium, line 4. Hello?
Yes. I wanted to point out that there is nothing you can do with the Tree of Heaven. I've tried turning it. I've tried using it in pieces of woodwork.
Really?
It's horrible.
Yeah. It's probably real soft.
It will not even burn.
Yeah, I was going to say, probably the wood is so soft. It probably, right.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
A quick question, though. How do you start a Bing cherry seed? Just put it in the ground?
Yeah, it's one of the – more than likely now, I don't know if they need to go through a cold period. Now, some of them actually need to go through a cold period. We have to put it in the refrigerator for a while. So I'm not sure on those how well that would work by just planting it. Sometimes they need that. Or you could just plant it and let winter do it for you and let it go from there. But they may go ahead and germinate anyway. So it's a roundabout answer, but it'd be one of those things we'd have to check on.
You could probably just go ahead and buy a start. It'd be better, right?
That would be a lot better, because then you know what you're getting and,
you know
which ones you're getting and all that kind of stuff. And Bing cherries are a little bit harder for us to grow. Sweet cherries are harder than sour cherries. Sour cherries are much easier to grow.
Okay, so. Thank you.
All right, thanks. Well, they're just about the point we have to leave it. But again, we remind people that if you like to do some garden walks for the next 3 weekends, ours in the Champaign County Master Gardeners, that's going to be in 2 weeks. Is that right? On the 26th?
June 26th.
But then there's also one, was it Macon?
Yes.
County was next week, and then there was another one after
that. Yes, June 13th is Macon County. It's a Sunday. And then June 19th is Mahomet Garden Club. Their garden walk is June 19th, and then ours on the 26th. And then the 27th is Vermillion County, Danville's Garden Club.
And
so that's a good start.
If you want to get the information, you know, call whoever is the nearest extension person to you. You can call Sandy's office, or if there's one closer to you and you'd like to get the information. And then if you want to do the Champaign County one, tickets are available in our area of garden centers.
Absolutely. Garden centers have been very, very supportive of all the garden walks. So check out the garden centers for garden walk tickets.
Right. Hey, thank you very much.
Sure, thank you.
Sandy Mason, she's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. We're midway through here. Celeste Quinn will be talking about ants in the next part of the show. So don't want you to go away.
Support comes from the Champaign County Forest Preserve District, with Second Sunday music performances at Lake of the Woods Forest Preserve in Mahomet, artwork in the Early American Museum, and music in the garden at 5. June 13th features watercolors by Sally Walsh and music from Big Blue Stem. Information at 586-2612 or at ccfpd.org.
And we'll break here, as we usually do, for news and update in the markets. Stay tuned.
Agricultural information on WILL is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dave Dickey with a look at the marketplace, where at the Chicago Board of Trade, looks like corn is finally beginning to catch, at least in the nearby contracts. Soybeans, a mixed affair today, with the nearby gaining on the deferreds. Let's look at some particulars. Begin with wheat in Kansas City, where July is at 4.64, up 2. December 4.93, up 1.75. July wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade at 4.36.5, up 4.25. December 4.82.75, up 2.75. July corn, 3.38, up 2.25. September 3.45, unchanged. December 3.56, up 1. March of 2011, 3.68, down 3/4. May 3.77, down.